He said that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, and that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Welcome to Willie's World. This is Willie. Are you expecting somebody else? Anyway, this is episode 8 and subtitled Seychelles and Balloons in a Side of Rice. Hopefully that'll become clear later what that's all about. But for now, when you hear Seychelles in the Russia thing, you know it's kind of like getting to the end because they had to really dig up an exotic name to make people even want to look into it. Anyway, a little bit on VDH on TDS. Say what? VDH stands for Victor Davis Hanson, and TDS stands for Trump Derangement Syndrome. And in this clip, VDH tries to explain what all that insanity is about. Victor Davis Hanson is a classicist, of which there are only a handful these days, a columnist, and a farmer. He's a senior fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution, and visiting professor at Hillsdale College. The best history course I ever took was a course he taught at Hillsdale College about Athens and Sparta. You can do it for free on Hillsdale College, so I highly recommend it. Anyway, here's VDH on TDS.
Part of the problem with the media hysteria is, again, if you've lost the legislatures, the local offices, governorship, Senate House, then you don't have political power. And so there's an anger at that. And it's an, if you're the party of the very wealthy, the suburban, and the educated, which now the Democratic Party is, if you look at the per capita income of blue counties, overwhelmingly these are Democratic, then you're angry that stupider people, less well-spoken people, less educated, are dictating decisions that you think affect your lives. And you don't know how to respond because politically there's no outlet for it. And one of the ironies is the media now is the other party. So if the media starts to use the F word or the shit word or whatever that, then the politicians follow suit, not vice versa. If the media builds up Black Lives Matter or transgender Hollywood celebrities create LGBT movement or global warming comes out of the culture, then the Democratic Party reacts to it. So it's this hysteria from Trump is, in the Democratic sense, reactive. Chuck Schumer reacts to Trump after what he reads in the media about Trump. And they don't really have a political base because Dianne Feinstein is 83, Nancy Pelosi is 79, Steny Hoyer is 77, Jerry Brown is 80, Bernie Sanders is 76. And the people who are young are more frightening. I mean, Keith Ellison and Perez. So they don't have a second team that's going to come in. Whatever you think about the Republicans, they've got young people like Paul Ryan and in the House, and they've got young governors, Marco Rubio. So there's a frustration that politically they don't know what to do, and they're angry at this guy who doesn't fit their image of a president. He doesn't speak well. He's not educated in the way that they think he is. And their way of thinking, and I've tried this conversation, maybe some of you have, with left-wing people who hate Trump. I said, do you think it's easy to make a buck in the Manhattan real estate world? crooked unions, crooked politicians, crooked community organizing groups, crooked environmentalists, and you're going to build a skyscraper in downtown Manhattan. You've got to be a genius to survive. They don't see that. So they underestimated him in the campaign, and now as president, they're underestimating him. So what is he trying to do?
Okay, there you have VDS on TDS. I think he explains it about as well as anybody that I've heard. Next up, we got some commentary from Mark Levin, who is the number three conservative radio show host in the country and has a new television program called Conservative Radio, CRTS. Highly recommend it for some really good conservative news. Anyway, in this episode, he tries to explain the anatomy of a fake scandal and uses the current fake scandal as the perfect example. So let him explain it better than I can. Here we go, Mark Levin.
Coming up on Levin TV, Mueller, the Seychelles, and more of the prosecutor and media's BS.
Let me just say why this meeting is getting so much attention, because I know you're minimizing it.
But it's really not.
It all starts now.
This is where freedom reigns.
If you believe in America, if you believe in the Constitution, the Constitution empowers us. It's a new day. America's back. America's back, and America's going to get strong again. We're going to defend America, and we're going to defend our interests.
Liberty's Voice, Levin TV.
Hello, America. I'm Mark Levin. This is Levin TV. We're on CRTV, Conservative Review TV, and I hope you're getting subscriptions for your family and your friend. We have such a magnificent lineup on this network. Got my buddy Robertson, my buddy Wilkow, my buddy Crowder, all kinds of buddies. And a lot more. So I hope you'll do that for your family and friends. Really, it's worthwhile. We have a new fake scandal. Ever hear of the Seychelles? It's an island, tiny little speck east of the east side of Africa. And I thought to myself, where the hell is this place? I never heard of it before. Everybody, oh, it's a great place to make. Oh, it's great. So we found out there's 94,000 people on this island. And it's a country. It's a country. So I thought to myself, 94,000 people, it's a country. Maybe we should move there. But anyway, it's all over the Washington Post, all over the New York Times, all over the media. They're all worked up. There was a meeting on this island, this Seychelles Island. And very scary kind of meeting. They were collaborating. They were conspiring. What were they doing in this meeting? When did this take place? All right, I'll walk you through this latest phony issue that's being leaked out by the prosecutor's office to the media. By the way, this is an old story. It's a story that goes back to August on CNN, back to September on Fox, but let's play. Let's check it out. Go.
Blackwater founder Eric Prince met with a Russian close to President Vladimir Putin in January. U.S., European, and Arab officials.
Stop! Oh, my God. Eric Prince met with a Russian close to Vladimir Putin in January, U.S., European, and Arab officials say. January what? This is important. 2017. January 2017? And the new president is inaugurated on January 20th, 2017. Wow, what took place? Go ahead.
The secret meeting was held in the Seychelles 9 days before Trump took office.
Whoa! Let's see, 9 minus 20. So it took place on January 11, 2017, 9 days before Trump took office. What took place at this secret meeting? Go.
It was part of an apparent effort to start a back channel between Putin and Trump.
Stop! Stop! Did they not just say that it took place on January 11th? Did they not say that? Is that not 9 days before Trump becomes president of the United States? Why would you need a back channel between Putin and Trump?
9 days before he becomes president of the United States. Can anyone figure that out? It doesn't make any sense. When he can have a front channel 9 days later. Phony, phony, phony issue. Go ahead.
Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi, helped arrange the meeting.
Wow.
It came within weeks of private talks between Trump representatives and the UAE.
Stop. Came within weeks of private talks between Trump representatives and the UAE. An incoming administration that's reaching out to foreign governments reaching out to an incoming administration. It happens all the time. And why wouldn't it? We have a new president coming into office. This is so bogus. It's just pathetic. Go ahead.
Prince founded Blackwater, a security firm that became a symbol of U.S. abuses in Iraq.
Stop. So now we have the latest devil figure. This guy, Prince. See him? Now you're supposed to hate him. I hate this guy. I hate this guy. I hate this guy. Do you know anything about it? I don't know a damn thing about this. Blackwater? Oh, I hate that group. I hate that group. I hate that. Well, do you know anything about it? No, not really. Okay. But they're a symbol of U.S. abuses in Iraq. Oh. Go ahead.
He moved to the Emirates in 2010 and has close ties to the royal family.
He has close ties to the royal family. So what? Who cares? Go ahead.
At the time of the meeting, Prince had no formal role with Trump's team.
Okay, so why that picture? Washington Compost. So if he had no formal role with the Trump team, why are you showing Trump and Melania Trump? Go ahead.
But officials say he presented himself as Trump's unofficial envoy to set up the meeting.
Who cares? That's his problem. That's not Trump's problem. Okay, ready to hate? I hate this guy. I hate this guy. I hate this guy. Go.
Prince gave $250,000 to Trump's campaign, the National Party, and a pro-Trump super PAC.
Ooh.
And Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is his sister.
All right, let's stop. These people are extraordinarily wealthy. You may have heard of this name, DeVos. They are billionaires, the DeVos family. Betsy married into the DeVos family. So what? Go ahead.
The FBI is looking into the Seychelles meeting as part of the probe into alleged Russian interference in the 2016 election.
No, wait a minute. How can it be part of the probe of Russian interference in the 2016 election when the meeting took place January 11, 2017? Do I have that right? Huh? What? Yeah? Somebody get on the FBI hotline. Get on the FBI hotline. Tell them. This doesn't make, no, they won't even bother if you call on the FBI hotline, as I recall. Go ahead.
Trump has called the investigation into his campaign ties to Russia fake news.
I'm still having trouble following what the issue is here. So there was a meeting on January 11th, 9 days before this president is inaugurated, to set up a back channel to Putin when you're going to be president in 9 days? And the guy setting it up has really no formal ties to the campaign? I still don't understand what the issue is. Does anybody understand what the issue is? Of course not. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Next piece of mud thrown against the wall, and the next one, and the next one. Eric Prince on secret meeting with Russians to set up a back channel between Trump and Putin, even though he's a minor player. And there's no link to Trump. Didn't they just show that? You know, when he and his wife are dancing, president in the first lane, and it's 9 days before he's inaugurated. It is incoherent. But CNN's on the job. This is way back in August. Now, where are we? In March? August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March. Wow, that's 7 months ago. 7 months ago, this story was out. But today, it's brand new because Mr. Mueller, Clouseau, he's looking into this connection with the Russians. CNN, August 7, 2017, with this fella, Eric Prince. Go.
A lot has been made of a meeting that you had with a Russian who was close.
By the way, does Eric Prince smell alcohol in her breath? I think so. Remember the Nuremberg interview the other day? You know, I smell alcohol in your breath.
Go ahead.
To Vladimir Putin on the remote island of the Seychelles during the Trump transition, right? This meeting that everyone knows happened now. Who from the Trump team...
So wait a minute. So everybody knew 7 months ago that the meeting happened. That secret meeting, 9 days before the inauguration. Very controversial. Go.
...asked you to take the meeting.
No one. Zero. I was there on business. Okay? I was there meeting with Emirati officials.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of other people there. I met a guy. And clearly the U.S. intelligence community felt necessary to unmask me and leak it to the media. But if the media...
Now, stop. Do you understand what took place? Through espionage tactics of the prior administration, the Obama administration, they pick up this guy's name. I don't know if it's part of FISA. I don't know if it's so-called incidental intelligence. But they get the guy's name, and they leak him and his name to the media. That's how this CNN host knows to ask him about these things. So his name is leaked to the media by the Obama administration. Go ahead.
Session on the Trump-Russia collusion, they've kind of jumped the shark if they're thinking that I had something to do with that, because this meeting occurred in January, long after the election. So there's either all this grand Trump collusion plan before the election or not, because if they ask me to go meet with some Russian...
How can you have election collusion after the election? Can somebody tell me that? They colluded with the Russians during the election. And in January 11th, they had him... Excuse me? January 11th is well after the election. He's almost president at that point. Well, whatever. Which calendar are you looking at? Well, we're looking at the Arabic calendar. In the Arabic calendar, where you read it up... All right, go ahead.
Which no one actually did. I was happened to be there, and I met a Russian.
Who'd you meet?
Pretty thin. Some fund manager. I can't even remember his name.
A fund manager. But you don't remember his name.
I don't remember his name. We didn't
exchange. Now, notice she has zero curiosity about the leak. She doesn't pick up on the fact that it's well after the election, almost 2 months after the election. It's 2 months after the election. But that doesn't stop her. She's plowing ahead. Go ahead.
Guards.
How long was it? The meeting, do you remember?
It probably lasted.
Why does that matter? If it's 5 minutes or 5 years, why does it matter? Go ahead.
About as long as one beer.
So it was a casual setting?
Absolutely.
Sort of over beers. Okay. Let me just say why this meeting is getting so much attention. Because I know you're minimizing it.
But it's really not.
Well, it has been reported on extensively. Let me just lay out the timeline here, Eric, so everyone can understand, because you know this, but not everybody else does.
Help us out.
Before this meeting happened, between you and somebody who is a Putin confidant, and I know that from talking to people who know a lot about this meeting.
Yeah.
So this person isn't just a random Russian.
Yeah.
In December, the Washington Post reports you met with Trump transition officials at Trump Tower, right? Because you know people there, that makes complete sense. That same month, I'm also aware there was a meeting.
Now, let's stop. So first of all, last time I checked, December is also after the November election. Just want to be clear about this. The election was the first Tuesday in November. This is December. So there wasn't collusion during the campaign. There couldn't have been. Campaign's over. Go ahead.
Trump Tower between Jared Kushner, Steve Bannon, Michael Flynn, and the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi, Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed. In December, the Washington Post reports then that you had a private meeting with the Emirati Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Zayed. Then the meeting comes with the Russian in the Seychelles in January. I know the Emiratis delivered the Russian to the meeting. That's why the question is so important.
No, why is the question? I'm missing this. Why is the question so important? This is about collusion with the Russians during the campaign, and all we hear about is something else, other things. Never about collusion with the Russians during the campaign. This didn't even take place during the campaign. Now remember, this is from August, and it's just being regurgitated today because the media is out there. The prosecutor, the special counsel, his office has leaked that they're looking at this again. We're looking at this again. Somebody may have obstructed justice. Somebody may have lied under oath. We're looking at this again. This incredible back-channel meeting. 9 days before the president's going to become president. Why would he set up a back-channel meeting when in 9 days he can open the front doors and have any meeting he wants? It doesn't make any sense. Go.
Or you were working on behalf of the Trump team, or even if they didn't ask you, was anyone on the Trump team aware that you were at this meeting?
No one was aware from the Trump team that I was even there.
No one was aware of
it. It was private business.
There.
It had nothing to do with the U.S. government. It had nothing to do with the Trump team or the transition team or anything else.
And what was the meeting about then?
Future business. It's that the Russian was someone that the Emiratis had done business with and said it's maybe someone useful for you to know.
And that was pretty much the extent of it.
That's it.
Wow. She's on to something there. Maybe she can explain to us what she's on to. It's so stupid. Then, a month and a half later, September 21, 2017, why is that date important? It's my birthday, truthfully. But September 21, is it your birthday too? I forgot.
Just mine.
So I'm sure it'll be a national holiday one day. Fox News special report with our friend Rhett Baer, who happens to be actually a real journalist. And it involves Susan Rice, who's a leaker, who's an unmasker, who is dishonest, who is a serial liar when it came to Benghazi, and who cannot be trusted. Here's how that went. Go.
We're learning more tonight about how the Obama administration and officials there requested the identities of Trump team personnel, people under government surveillance, the so-called unmasking of those names. Chief Intelligence Correspondent Catherine Herridge has new details. Good evening, Catherine.
Thank you, Brett. A source close to the issue tells Fox News that former National Security Advisor Susan Rice requested the unmasking of an overseas meeting that took place in the Seychelles in early January, reportedly set up by the United Arab Emirates Crown Prince.
Get this straight. Susan Rice, in the final days of the Obama administration, because that meeting took place on January 11th. This is important. I don't think half the reporters even know what's important about what they're saying. 9 days before the Trump administration took over from the Obama administration, they are surveilling Trump world. They are still surveilling Trump world. And they hid into this meeting that took place on January 11th, 9 days before Trump becomes president of the United States. And Susan Rice is still unmasking American citizens. And somehow, this guy's name leaks to the media. And of course, she says, I don't leak. I have nothing. I've never leaked in my life. I don't know. And of course, she's her own character witness, which is a huge problem. But think about this. Go ahead.
And included Education Secretary Betsy DeVos's brother, businessman Eric Prince, as well as a Russian businessman with alleged ties to the Kremlin. The timing matters because Rice confirmed to the House Intelligence Committee that a month earlier she unmasked Trump transition officials at a December 2016 Trump Tower meeting with the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, former campaign strategist Steve Bannon, incoming National Security Advisor Michael...
So let's stop. So there's no more debate that the Obama administration was spying on Trump world. Got it? Kushner, Bannon, Flynn, and probably many others. Kushner, Bannon, Flynn. The issue here to me isn't this meeting, which is perfectly legal. The issue here to me is they were spying on these people and leaking their names to the media. Felonies. Go ahead.
Flynn and the Crown Prince. During her congressional interview on September 6th, the source said Rice justified the unmasking, stating there can only be one government at a time, and she said she reached out to the Trump team on the issue. Rice was pressed repeatedly on how the information she received about American citizens whose names surfaced during surveillance of foreign targets got to the media. The first reference is an April Washington Post report that details both meetings. The source said Rice took the same position she has in public.
The allegation is that somehow Obama administration officials utilized intelligence for political purposes. That's absolutely false.
Did she not? Did they not spy on Trump world? Did they not just admit it? That 9 days before Trump was going to be president of the United States, did they not admit that they spied on a meeting that took place 9 days before? And then this guy, Prince's name, is leaked to the media? That's spying. It's also a felony when you leak somebody's name like that. Go ahead.
Nothing to nobody. And never have and never would.
I said nothing to nobody. Good English, by the way. I said nothing to nobody, never have and never would. Does anybody believe that Susan Rice has never leaked while serving in public office? That would be a first. I don't believe it for 2 seconds. So... you getting a better feel for this now? Now that we're walking through it, all the hysteria in the media, now that we're actually doing real time frames here, there's a couple of long pieces out there by left-wing media, Vanity Fair, Vox, VOX. Now let's see some of what they say here. Now remember, this was a secret meeting. Spying of a secret meeting. Under investigation now by the special counsel. All of which, if it's taking place, these investigations are supposed to be secret. All of which is being leaked. It's dumped out there in the media by the special prosecutor's office, who Trey Gowdy says, I have more faith in this guy than I... Shut up, Trey. Anyway, this is Vanity Fair. Last night at the White House, as the White House was dealing with the resignation of Gary Cohn, oh my God, somebody resigned. A new allegation to the Stormy Daniels saga. She's the porno person. By the way, John Kennedy had hundreds of affairs. Lyndon Johnson had more affairs than John Kennedy. We know all about Bill Clinton and all of his affairs. And throughout it all, we were told, hey, that's personal. That's private. Hey, don't worry about it. No attention. That's not fair. That's personal. That's private. What's that have to do again? Then we have a porno star. Every day, it's the same. What's her name? Stormy something. Every day, Stormy this, and she signed to this, and she did to this, and it did to that. I thought that's private. Anyway, let me go on. The New York Times published a labyrinthine story centered on a man named George Nader.
Ooh.
Related to Ralph Nader? No, I don't think so. An advisor to the United Arab Emirates, whose involvement with the Trump campaign appears to cast new light on what has been a dark frontier of Robert Mueller's Russian investigation. Oh, do tell. Last year, the Washington Post reported on a secret meeting between representatives for the United Arab Emirates, Blackwater founder Eric Prince, you've seen that, and a Russian investor with close ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin, which took place on a remote Seychelles Island just days before Donald Trump's inauguration. Okay. See the buildup? My God, what could have taken place? Did Donald Trump meet there and agree to give 20% of our uranium to Putin? No, he didn't do that. It was unknown at the time what Prince and the Russian envoy discussed. Sources told the Washington Post that the goal was to open a dialogue with the Russian government outside of traditional diplomatic channels. Now, why would they want to open up a dialogue with the Russian government outside of official government channels 9 days before Trump runs the government? It doesn't make any sense. Well, let's go on. The UAA reportedly agreed to broker the meeting in hopes of convincing Russia to scale back its relationship with Iran. By the way, that's a good thing, right? As we now know, the meeting was arranged with the help of Nader, who the FBI picked up at Dulles International Airport in January. He was immediately served with search warrants and recently testified before a grand jury. Here's what we know about Nader, why Mueller's interested in the Trump campaign's contacts with the UAE, and what the Seychelles meeting could mean for the Russian investigation. So, the lib media outlets are being fed this stuff, because otherwise how would they know anything? Who's George Nader? Remember, you have to hate this guy, too. A Lebanese-American businessman, Nader currently serves as an advisor to Emirati Crown Prince Yabba Dabba Doo, who's developed a close relationship with Jared Kushner.
Ooh.
For years, Nader has been a well-known, if somewhat off-the-radar, figure in certain political circles. According to the Times, Nader worked with the Bill Clinton administration in its attempt to broker a peace deal between Syria and Israel, convincing the White House that he could leverage his influential contacts with the Syrian government. After the 2003 invasion of Iraq, Nader worked for Prince's private security company, Blackwater, which is now known as Academi, as a business development consultant, according to a 2010 deposition. At the time of the 2016 election, he was serving as an advisor to Prince Mohammed, was a frequent visitor to the White House during the months of the Trump administration, where he met with Kushner and former chief strategist Steve Bannon. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I just suffered through that paragraph. As you know, I have pneumonia. Part of my left lung is clogged up, and I just pushed that out of my mouth, and I'm reading, what the hell is this? So far, there's nothing. What did he do?
Oh, there's more. How is Prince connected to Trump? This Eric Prince. So we're done with Nader, right? Done with him. Now let's get Prince. Prince, the brother of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. Why do they keep saying that? What does that have to do with anything? Never held a former role in the Trump campaign, the transition team, or the administration, but has been a vocal supporter of Trump nonetheless. Oh. According to the Post, he donated $250,000 to the Trump campaign after the Republican National Convention and developed a close relationship with Bannon. The Intercept has reported that Prince later lobbied contacts inside the Trump administration to set up a private network of intelligent contractors for the CIA, an idea that U.S. officials in the White House appeared to reject. Okay, what does that have to do with anything? Zero. When he was first asked about the Seychelles meeting on CNN, and you saw it, Prince told anchor Aaron Burnett that he'd been there on business to meet with the Emirati officials, that he only had a brief meeting with some fund manager, I can't remember his name, and so forth and so on. Okay. Now, why is Mueller interested in Nader, says Vanity Fair. He appears to have been a key player in the Seychelles meeting, whose attendees included Nader, Prince, and Kirill Dmitriev, the Russian investor with ties to Putin. Nader reportedly arranged the meeting on behalf of Prince Mohammed of the UAE, while Prince, Eric Prince, allegedly served as a Trump transition envoy, and Dmitriev was there representing the Kremlin. Okay, so what? I still don't get this. According to the Times, Mueller has also asked witnesses about any attempts by the Emiratis through Nader to buy political influence by supporting the Trump campaign. The meeting's in January. I have an idea. Why doesn't Mueller go to the UN and just ask every government, did you have any meeting with a Trump person? Do you have any meeting with a Trump person? And notice how exclusive this is. They don't ask about Clinton. Do you have any meeting with the Clinton campaign? Do you have any meeting with it? Not a word. Not a word. Now, it goes on. The investigation could shed light on the Trump administration's decision to back the UAE and Saudi Arabia in the blockade of Qatar. This is so crazy. So crazy. The blockade of Qatar has been pushed by many of the Gulf Arab states because Qatar, quite frankly, is off the reservation. It plays with the terrorists and it plays with us. This is so out of, we have a prosecutor roving around looking for this stuff, and after the election meeting, trying to figure out if this was influence, the president's decision with respect to Qatar. What's the deal with Dmitriev, they ask. Dmitriev is the CEO of the Russian Direct Investment Fund, one of several official sovereign wealth funds tied to the Russian government, RDIF. Which invests public money in private projects, was targeted by the Obama administration in 2014 when the U.S. imposed sanctions on Russia. Until recently, it was a subsidiary of some name I can't pronounce. It's Russian, all consonants. It's the Russian bank whose CEO, Sergei Gorkov, met with Kushner during the transition. Did they say during the transition? I just want to make clear, not during the campaign. According to the New York Slimes, Abu Dhabi committed to investing $6 billion in Dmitriev's fund after Prince Mohammed met with Putin in 2013. So what? What's that have to do with us? Nothing. So here I am, muscling my way through this, just to point this out. Then they're not done. This is so much gibberish. What has Prince said about the Seychelles meeting? During his congressional testimony before the House Intelligence Committee last December. So he has this confidential testimony, and of course, Schiff and the others just leak it out. Prince came under fire from Democrats over the meeting. While Prince dismissed the narrative that he acted as a Trump envoy, he did concede that Bannon had informed him of Prince Mohammed's 2016 New York meeting before the Seychelles encounter. When pressed by Representative Adam Schiff, the committee's ranking Democrat, Prince denied that either meeting had anything to do with the Russians. So what does this mean for Trump? The revelation that Nader is cooperating with Mueller suggests that the special prosecutors continue to dig into the foreign and financial ties of the Trump family. All right. Now, we started with Russian collusion. Then we started with this nefarious secret meeting in the Seychelles that nobody's ever heard of before. This meeting on January 11th, 9 days before Trump becomes president, to work a back channel with the Russians. Isn't that what they said? Then we go from there, and now we're told, no, 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 it's not the back channel with the Russians. It's now, why did we take the actions against Qatar? Was it because of this meeting and this influence? And then it's, no, no, forget about that. What about the financial ties of the Trumps? What's happening to this country? Honest to God, I don't know. What's happening to this country? This is so disgusting to me. The media running with this all day long. What happened to Michael Wolff, the phony author? What happened to that goofball psychologist over there from Yale who was telling us that President Trump is mentally deranged and they ought to trigger the 25th Amendment? What happened to all that? Now, all of a sudden, then we get the porno star. She comes and goes into the stories and so forth and so on. Remember the dossier? Oh, yeah. No credibility or corroboration, whatever. That went on week after week after week after week. Now this? What's this? I don't even know what this is. They don't even know what it is. They just keep throwing the slop against the wall. But it's Mueller and his people who are leaking. We have a man, a special counsel, who has no constitutional role, who's out to destroy this president and the presidency, and he will go anywhere to do it, and the media love it. They just regurgitate it. They love it. And they create these dark figures. Oh, Eric Prince. What the hell's wrong with Eric Prince? This guy, Nader, the Lebanese American. Oh, that might be a problem. And it goes on and on and on. That's it.
Okay, that's Mark Levin on the latest scandal that's pretty much fake news made into a whole story. So how does one explain the disconnect between the media coverage of Russia, and what us common folk seem to see is the reality of it? The reality being, in my mind, Russia is really Clinton. Well, here's some commentary from somebody named Lori Harfenist, from a channel called RT. She has a weekly show called The Resident, and here is her take on the media coverage.
John Gabriel is the editor for an outlet called Ricochet, and he just did some media analysis that I found really compelling in an article entitled What Americans Care About Versus What the Media Cares About. For the article, Gabriel first takes a look at part of a recent Bloomberg poll, which asked Americans what they think is the top issue facing the country right now. By far, easily, the top issue for Americans in the poll was healthcare. 35% of those polled said that's the most important issue, which is not surprising, because this is an issue that actually affects people's lives. Unemployment and jobs came in second, followed by terrorism, immigration, and climate change. All of those seem like reasonable items to top the list. And then after all those, way down at the bottom was America's relationship with Russia. Only 6% of those polled cared about that as their issue. Then, after reviewing the poll, Gabriel shifts to information from another recent survey in which the Media Research Center calculates the amount of time network news spends on covering issues. In that survey, the MRC found that, over the course of about a month, network news spent over 350 minutes of time covering the whole Russia investigation story. But when it came to healthcare, the way they covered it, of course, was talking about the repeal and replace of Obamacare only, and they only spent 17 minutes covering that. Then Gabriel compares the two. He looked at what Americans care about and what the media cares about and saw the ridiculous difference between the two. Even though only 6% of Americans think Russia is a big issue, the news spent 75% of their time talking about it ad nauseum. Contrast that with the fact that healthcare is the biggest concern for Americans, and the news only spent 4% of their time talking about it. Seriously, how insane is that? The difference is beyond striking between what Americans care about and what the media cares about. It is such a difference that there's no way to think that the news doesn't have some sort of ulterior motive here than talking about what Americans care about. I mean, if it's clear that Americans care mostly about healthcare and the news ignores that, you gotta ask yourself why. Why does the mainstream news harp on something Americans don't rank high in importance? It all adds up to one thing. The media has a whole other agenda with their coverage, and there's nothing healthy about it.
Okay, on this final track, we have the Mark Levin, a clip from his radio show on March 9th about the breaking story of Susan Rice's role in the Russia thing. And basically, he talks about how she gave stand down orders on investigation of Russia interference and explains why, and makes a case for, you know, like, it looks like everything kind of goes through Susan Rice, doesn't it? And Obama describes her as his sister. And don't forget, she's right down the hall in the White House. So obviously, Obama knew everything. But anyway, let Mark Levin make the case for me. He's way better at it.
Now, this is a very short segment, ladies and gentlemen, but let me start it this way. I think in order to fully understand the abuse of surveillance, of espionage, of spying that took place in this last election by the Obama administration against the Trump campaign, the Trump transition, and the Trump administration, all roads ultimately lead to Obama, but they all go through Susan Rice. I believe this strongly. I believe all roads go through Susan Rice. She was the assistant to the president for national security. She was the director of the National Security Council. She was involved in the unmasking of Americans. She's given phony justifications, whether it's Eric Prince or Mike Flynn. And she has said, look, we can only have one foreign policy at a time. And so in making that assertion, apparently in testifying to the House some point some months ago, she basically said that the Obama administration, and presumably through her orders or at least with her involvement, was free to spy on Americans through the back door, and she knew what she was doing, by this so-called incidental collection of information and unmasking of individuals, if she felt that the Trump campaign was different from the Obama foreign policy. All right, Susan Rice. Now, understand, this is from radical left media reporters and outlets like BizPac Review, which is a left-wing site. And they are citing Mother Jones, which is a radical left-wing site. They're citing David Corn, who's a radical leftist, and Michael Isikoff, who's a liberal. Who's a liberal. Now listen to this. It was in the heat of the 26th presidential campaign that Susan Rice proved to be a pivotal figure, preventing the United States from countering Russian attempts at election meddling. Now that is a blockbuster first sentence that should draw the attention of every media outlet in this country, that should draw the attention of the special counsel and his Democrat prosecutors. This should draw the attention of every oversight committee in the House and Senate. It was in the heat of the 2016 presidential campaign that Susan Rice proved to be a pivotal figure preventing the United States from countering Russian attempts at election meddling. Wow. It goes on. The former National Security Advisor, who chaired a number of high-ranking intelligence principals, told an official, quote, to stand down, unquote, on developing cyber espionage countermeasures because they had not been approved by President Obama.
And why haven't they been approved by President Obama? She was right down the hall from him. He said Susan Rice was like a sister to him. In a book co-authored by Michael Isakov and David Korn called Russian Roulette, the inside story of Putin's war on America and the election of Donald Trump, previewed by Mother Jones, divulges the background of the Obama decision not to aggressively resist Russian attempts at meddling in the United States election. And that is the sickening irony, ladies and gentlemen, that it was Obama and his people who refused to fight back against the Russians. It's Obama and his people that turned the intelligence agencies and law enforcement against the Republican nominee for President of the United States in order to help the Democrat nominee who had funded the dossier through her campaign in the Democrat Party. And let me remind you that the President of the United States is the chairman of his party, in effect. He controls his party. Donald Trump controls the Republican National Committee. Barack Obama controlled the Democrat National Committee. So when the Democrat National Committee, along with the Hillary Clinton campaign, put up the money to buy a warrant, in essence, that DNC was under Barack Obama. Susan Rice was under Barack Obama. James Comey was under Barack Obama. Loretta Lynch was under Barack Obama. Let's go back. At one pivotal point during the presidential campaign, this is all new, this is crucially important. At one pivotal point during the presidential campaign, Susan Rice directly told the White House Director of Cybersecurity, Michael Daniel, to cease and desist from developing further technological options to thwart apparent Russian attempts to create havoc in the digital elections infrastructure. Got that? Got that, Mueller? And your Democrat prosecutors? Got it? The book recounts as follows. One day in late August, National Security Advisor Susan Rice called Daniel, this is the cyber security expert, into her office and demanded that he cease and desist from working on the cyber options he was developing. Don't get ahead of us, she warned. The White House was not prepared to endorse any of these ideas. Daniel and his team in the White House Cyber Response Group were given strict orders. Stand down. She told Daniel to, quote, knock it off. He recalled, as the book recounts. That was one pissed off national security advisor, Daniel would say to one of his aides. The cybersecurity analyst would complain about the Rice incident to other intelligence officials. The book passage describes how it shook out. Quote, in his morning staff meeting, Daniel, that's the cybersecurity chief, matter-of-factly said to his team that it had to stop work on options to counter the Russian attack. Quote, we've been told to stand down. Daniel Prieto, one of Daniel's top deputies, recalled, quote, I was incredulous and in disbelief. It took me a moment to process. In my head, I was like, did I hear that correctly? Then Prieto spoke up asking, why the hell are we standing down? Michael, can you help us understand? Daniel, the cybersecurity chief, informed them that the orders came from both Rice and Monaco, whoever that is. They were concerned that if the options were to leak, it would force Obama to act. They didn't want to box the president in, Prieto subsequently said. It was a critical moment that, as Prieto saw it, scuttled the chance for a forceful, immediate response to the Russian attack and keenly disappointed the NSC aides who've been developing the options. Now, let's digest all this. Susan Rice orders her cybersecurity team that was developing options in August, before the general election, to take on the Russians and their efforts to interfere in our election. And she told the White House cybersecurity team to stand down, quote unquote. Don't box in Obama. If you get Obama options, he's going to have to act. He's going to have to act. And what's the next point? He doesn't want to act. He doesn't want to do anything. He doesn't want to stop the Russians. And I told you why Obama wouldn't act and didn't want to stop the Russians a year ago. Remember what I told you? Because he felt sure that Hillary Clinton was going to be elected president of the United States, and he didn't want anybody saying that the election was fraudulent, that the Russians elected Hillary, you know, the sort of things they're saying about Trump. So he let them slide. Because in the end, Obama's about power, not integrity, not about elections. President Obama has been questioned by even his own former security officials for not acting more aggressively to counteract Russian active measures during the 2016 presidential campaign. As the New York Times related in an exculpatory piece, some former Obama officials now confess to misgivings about Mr. Obama's reluctance to act or speak out more forcefully, even as the evidence piled up during the spring and the summer of 2016 that the Russians hacked the Democrat National Committee, were behind the leak of damaging emails about Hillary Clinton. So who should be under investigation, ladies and gentlemen? Now, I can't read the entire piece, but they go on in this left-wing site called BizPac Review, citing Korn, who's a leftist, Isikoff, who's a liberal, Mother Jones, which is a radical, sheet, S-H-E-E-T. Here's what else they say. Susan Rice also exhibited suspicious behavior as she departed the Obama administration. Now, you know this to be the case, but let's underscore it. The former national security advisor sent a cryptic email to herself, and I might add, 15 minutes after the new president, Trump, was sworn in, providing political cover to the former president regarding a meeting on Russian election interference with former FBI Director James Comey, then Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, and former Vice President Joe Biden. And that meeting occurred on January 5th. And among other things, it's been reported that Obama ordered his team to be very careful about giving classified information to the incoming presidential administration. You believe that? Especially Flynn. Because you see, ladies and gentlemen, they were spying on Flynn. Oh, you don't understand. Incidental. They were spying on Flynn. Obama despised Flynn. Rice despised Flynn. Because Flynn stood up to them many, many times during the course of the final years of his career in terms of fighting ISIS in Iran. Disagreed with the president as a three-star general. And in this meeting, quote, President Obama began the conversation by stressing his continued commitment to ensuring that every aspect of this issue is handled by the book. Handled by the book. Intelligence and law enforcement communities, by the book. The president stressed that he's not asking about initiating or instructing anything from a law enforcement perspective. He reiterated that our law enforcement team needs to proceed as it normally would, by the book, Rice wrote to herself. Now, this is obviously an attempt to create a false record. These are not contemporaneous notes taken at the January 5th meeting. This was written on January 20th, after Trump was inaugurated. She wrote this because a light bulb went off. And she said, holy mackerel, I forgot to write a CYA. Why would you need to write? The president stressed he's not asking about initiating or instructing anything from law enforcement perspective. Because the president of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, that time Obama, and I keep saying it and saying it and saying it, Barack Obama knew a lot about what was taking place. How could he not? Much of it was in the newspaper. I know, because I pulled it together and went through it a year ago, as you recall. Much of it was in the newspaper. And don't tell me Jim Comey met with the president of the United States, including with others, and did inform him. Don't tell me Loretta Lynch met with the president of the United States and didn't inform him. Don't tell me Susan Rice met with the president of the United States and didn't inform him. That is simply an incredible lie. It's not possible. And they go on in this remarkable piece in this left-wing site, BizPak. It is remarkable, they write, that Susan Rice would so repeatedly turn up at critical junctures in the Russia investigation. They raise numerous questions. Why did Susan Rice issue the stand-down order? And by the way, we don't want Trey Gowdy anywhere near this investigation because Susan Rice has that fool wrapped around her finger.
Well, she gave good reasons for the unmasking, I must say. Well, that Bob Mueller has enormous integrity. I don't think he's leaking at all.
Wouldn't a national security advisor normally want to explore all options and go through extraordinary lengths to ensure the integrity of our national elections? And why did Rice send an email to herself that ostensibly exonerates the president in highly scripted language as if it was dictated to her? This is highly questionable behavior from a once influential security official whose actions are reverberating from her time in the office to this day. Prosecutors, investigators, whether criminal, whether congressional, need to put the screws to Rice because, in my humble opinion, she's obstructing and she's covering up. Just my opinion. I'll be right back. So we now know what we suspected, that the Obama administration affirmatively refused to stop the Russians. And Susan Rice specifically gave the order, Obama's right-hand gal, to their own cybersecurity team that was developing options to take on the Russians, to stand down. And they did effectively nothing. A monumental scandal. This is a monumental scandal. On the one hand, the Obama administration did nothing. Nothing to stop the Russians. On the other hand, they did everything conceivable, even inconceivable, to unleash the instrumentalities of federal law enforcement and intelligence agencies and the damn FISA court against Trump World. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And we have a prosecutor investigating Trump. Not Hillary, not Obama, not Rice, not Comey, not Lynch, Trump. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I tell you, when you spend time with me, I try to make it as worthwhile as possible. Why? Substance, information, context, and yes, passion. And we do have fun. I'll be right back. Let's continue, shall we? Jim, Marion, Illinois, Sirius Satellite. By the way, the location of one of our great federal prisons. Go right ahead.
Hey, Mark, thanks for having me.
Yes.
The new Fox show on Sunday.
You're going to love this Sunday with Netanyahu, I promise you. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. You know, you listen to the mainstream media, and it's it's Obama might have known or could have known. He orchestrated this. He is at the root of it, at the top level. They'll have you believe that a rogue agent in the IRS targeted all these conservative groups. There is no way. It's top down. And it's a full-on assault at the school level.
Well, let me address it this way. What did Obama do to stop the abuses in his administration? Anything?
Not one thing.
What did Obama do to stop the Russians? We now know. I read to you about Susan Rice, correct?
Correct.
He looked the other way or worse.
Stop it. I think he ushered it in.
All right, sir. Thank you for your call. It was awfully passive if he didn't.
Mark Levin, an unapologetic patriot and unapologetic constitutionalist. You can reach him at 877-381-3811.
The big story tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is that Susan Rice reportedly told the cybersecurity folks who wanted to provide options to the president at the time, Obama, to deal with Russia's interference with the election, to stand down and not provide options to Obama, or Obama would be boxed in. And I don't believe she did that on her own. I believe she was protecting Obama, who did not want to get involved. He assumed Hillary Clinton was going to be president, as I've said to you many, many times. He didn't want to, quote unquote, delegitimize her election. And yet that is exactly what they're trying to do now to Donald Trump.
Okay, now for the title of this episode, Seychelles and Balloons with a little bit of Susan Rice on the side. And, well, now you know what the Susan Rice thing is about. Seychelles and Balloons basically is a takeoff on a quote that a guy named Al McGuire used to use. He was an excellent college basketball coach at Marquette, and I think won at least one national title and then became a commentary. But he was noted for his clever commentary, and when somebody would ask him when he was a coach, like, you just lost by 40 points. How do you feel? He would smile and say, it's Seychelles and Balloons, meaning to say that, looking at life with a positive approach through the worst of situations is the way to go. And today, young people express it, I think, as it's all good. Anyway, this Russia thing is basically just going to leak out slowly, and slowly it will be unraveled, but I think it's obvious to people what's going on. So just remember, no matter how nuts it gets, it's all Seychelles and Balloons.